Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I'm Lori Strawn, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Alice Shelton. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Lori.
Today we take on, for the first of, I hope, many shows, Lauren Winner's book, Wearing God. This rich little book discusses some of the offbeat ways God is described in the Bible through metaphors like clothing, laughter, flame, food, and other things. It's all about seeing God in new ways, and that's what our show is about, too, so let's do it. We begin with a quotation that talks about the way that we see God and why it matters. Scholars have found correlations between the ways a person imagines God on the one hand, and on the other hand, eating disorders, shame, and alcoholism. People who primarily imagine God to be distant and judging, as opposed to intimate and loving, tend more towards psychopathology and have a higher rate of gun ownership. There are also social and political consequences to our images of God. As theologians Mary Daly and Judith Plaskow have pointed out, the characteristics we attribute to God will always be those characteristics we value most highly in our own society. Pretty deep. Alice, how would you say that people's images of God affect them? And how do they affect society?
Well, do I always start off by answering well? I think I do. When I think about encountering people and how people encounter me, I would say that I kind of put people in two broad categories, not to discriminate or whatever, but just kind of this is how I experience people. I experience some people as being generally assuming that all others are good until proven otherwise, or maybe not even with that caveat. And then there's another set who characterize the world as all others are to be distrusted until they earn trust, which I think you could roughly tie to kind of general images that people have about God. So to me, one reaction is very fear-based, which would sync up with God is a judger, God is distant, God is, you know, for someone who's had a negative father or mother experience, God is, you know, controlling parent, very rule-oriented. And then the other perspective would be someone who I would think has an image of God as more friend, nearby, close, loving, companioning, whatever. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that people are psychopaths only because they have that negative image of God. But I can certainly see that could be an impact. I mean, if you're constantly feeling that God and others, humans around you, are judging and angry and correcting all the time, that's gonna make you not very happy. It's going to make you not feel like you have a lot of control in your own life and those sorts of things. So the impact on society of having that perspective on God is certainly very negative from my standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because I thought of parents immediately too. It's sort of the way that your parents influence you. If you have good parents, you tend to be, you know, a certain way. If you had really bad experiences with your parents, yes, you can overcome them, but it can also affect you very strongly. And it affects your self-esteem, your ability to cope, the way you deal with other people. And when those images, I think, become reflective of a society and they aren't very life-affirming, and I'm looking at you, Isis, I think things can go really, really off the rails. And it can cause all sorts of evil.
Yeah, which is really another reason that I think it's important. The whole concept of it takes a village to raise a child really takes into consideration that part of the breakdown of our contemporary society, I think, in terms of support for kids and all that, it isn't so much, yes, it would be wonderful if every child had two adults living in the household, who one who served the father's role, one who served the mother's role, whatever. But even in society, when there were parents where a parent died young, as long as the village was there to support the child and there were role models with strong qualities, that child could function. But
right.
I think we've become so insulated and so afraid to be part of the support and discipline of other people's children, sometimes
yeah.
even our siblings. You know, that's a fundamental breakdown in just societal accountability, you know, Christian accountability, whatever you're going to call it. That's a weakness in our society now, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I agree. We don't want to get involved. We're afraid to get involved. I mean, if we get involved, what will happen? You know, will we get in trouble? You know, it really, that's very much, we're so disconnected from one another. And I think part of that disconnects us from God, because at least when you have the village supporting you, you know how the village feels about things. You know how the village feels about God. And I think a lot of young people are missing that.
Yeah. And you know, I was going to sort of react against the last line in this quotation about the characteristics we attribute to God will always be those characteristics we value most highly in our society. But then as I'm talking through that point and listening to your response to these points, I'm thinking, you know, I think what it's saying is that part of our view of God, or what we attribute to God, is that we're all important, super important individuals, and we want to have people mind their own business and let us be all that we can be, and we want God to be distant, and we want God to be so loving that there's no judgment, you know. And I don't think that's the way God is.
Right, right. I agree.
Not supposed to be comfortable.
Yes. And on that, you know, same road, let's talk about, I know it's very hard to do, but if you had to kind of homogenize an image of God that most Americans would feel sort of comfortable with, what would that image look like? And what would it say about the things that we value as Americans?
Well, I would say that the average American view of God could be well described as a pacifier. So it's something that when things are anxiety-producing, or we can't settle ourselves, or those around us can't settle us down, we grab that, and there's some peace that's temporary. But when that passes, we just drop the pacifier and go on, and then we don't think about the pacifier again until we're upset, and we put it back in our own mouth or somebody else does. So sort of a convenience type of thing. I mean, I see that people, and I would include myself in this, I go from station and station and station in life, kind of picking that up and putting it down and trying to thread a Christian faith and God present in my life through my everyday. But it's just a constant need to remind myself and redirect myself back to it, because my natural inclination is to just go on in my own, under my own direction.
What does that say about us? That we're just very self-reliant?
I do think this is a human condition. Because every person I know who's struggling, who I would say are faith-filled people who are making a concerted effort to live in a way that reflects God and Christ, and is struggling with this. You know, in some ways, the people who are trying harder feel like they're more aware of the struggle. I don't know.
Sure.
I think it says we're human. I mean, I do. I also think Americans, Westerners, are going to necessarily struggle with self-importance, right to a better life, right to, you know, me time, all those things, because we are so heavily ensconced in that on every medium that comes to us, radio, television, internet, self-help books, you know. I mean, stuff we talk about on this show sometimes, you know.
I'm going to have to get in here and say that my view of the quote-unquote American God is maybe not as human as yours, I would say that to most Americans, God is pro-America, pro-wealth building, but also kind of puritanical when it comes to a lot of things. I'd say that he, and I do mean he, is straight-laced, political, powerful, kingly, and absolutely 100% WASP and male. And I'd like to talk about how your perception or my perception differs from that and kind of, you know, how we feel about that.
I want to understand, did you say tingly?
Yes. I know we're not much on kings, but we do like our leaders.
Oh, kingly. I thought you said K-I-N-G. I thought you said tingly, like tingling. You get a tingling feeling. I was like, okay, Lori, I get all the other stuff. Tingly is not connecting. Okay, sorry, little segue there. Back to it. What was the question? How do I feel about that image that you just described?
Yeah, I was just thinking of my own perceptions of God. And mine are very different from that kind of picture. My God would be more siding with the poor, merciful, understanding, lovable, loving, forgiving, and I kind of thought, it sounds like a liberal God in a country that seems to more value a conservative God.
Yeah, I would agree, because mine would very much be, in fact, my image of God is growing less and less defined, more and more large. I just don't have... I was reading Samuel, the book of Samuel is what the daily readings are right now, and it's all through that and the Gospel of Mark. But Mark right now is totally into talking about the miracles Christ performed on earth. And I just was so tuned in today to thinking, gosh, I miss the miracles. I go through my days not thinking about the miracles and how much they happen. And I don't think the average American ever occurs to them unless they win this gigantic lottery. Then that's a miracle, as opposed to a motion of chance. I'm so far away from thinking of God as kingly in the way that we think of kingship in our society. I'm so far away from, I'm not against men, and I think that God has the best qualities of males and females, but I'm very far from experiencing God as male. But with that said, you know what, Lori? I've been working in my life on a lot of issues with my dad, you know, and so I've worked on those things. And so, you know, if I had really difficult relationship with my dad, I think I would have a different image of God, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree. Well, the author asked this question regarding three disparate images of God as king, as shepherd, and as dog. Quote, how do we pray to the God who is king or shepherd or dog? How does the God who is king or shepherd pray in us? How would you answer that?
These are great questions. So I'll kind of take them. How I would pray to God who is king or shepherd, which to me are totally different images.
Yes.
King is very rule bound, so I might pray to God as king as kind of a litany of sin sort of prayer, more of a confessing accountability type thing. Shepherd, and I love shepherd because especially if you read about how stupid sheep are and how absolutely goofballs they would walk off a cliff if they were, you know, they will follow blindly. And so prayer to God who is a shepherd is, you know, letting go, lead me, show me, direct me. Help me in my ignorance. It's pleading. It's dependent. It's not in a negative way, though. It's a good way. It's, you're letting go and being led. Now, a dog, that's very interesting to me, but to me, a dog is almost like God sitting at my feet, you know. So I'm not kind of getting the dog piece, so I'd be interested in your response on that one.
Yeah, and I think it varies widely depending how you feel about dogs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that it could be a very companionable image,
mm-hmm.
a protective
mm-hmm.
image even. But, you know, to some people who don't like dogs at all, or who look down on all animals, it would be a very kind of lowly and stupid, almost, beast image.
Yeah, and see, I'm glad you said that, because that actually is a better way to help myself and others, I think, understand why some people might have why the image of God as father or mother or whatever can have such a profound image. Because for me, mm-hmm. Lori, it's not that I don't like dogs, but dogs don't mean a lot to me. And so that's why I didn't relate. I mean, it's like, God is a dog? Okay, I don't have a relational connection to that. So, that's just a great example. People usually do have a strong emotional reaction to God as father or mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't get beyond their own reaction. But with a dog or whatever, I like that. How do they pray in us, though? We didn't connect into that one.
We didn't. Yeah, but it would be so disparate. I mean, a king would be more commanding, I would think, as you said. A shepherd would be more guiding.
Mm-hmm.
And
a dog
would either wag its tail or growl, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, a dog might just be walking along with, you know, just kind of a presence or what. To me, a dog, in the images you talked about, companioning, would almost be the prayer of the God who walks with you through a discernment process where there's presence and companionship and love and kind of unconditional.
But the way you thought about God, whether it was king, shepherd, or dog, would really skew your whole spiritual journey, I would think.
Yeah. And I wonder if you think it's genuinely possible for people to change their image of God, or that we have different images at different times in our lives.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think it is possible, and I do think it changes somewhat, although I think some of the basic things are rooted in you and have to do with things like how you were raised what your early life experiences were and that sort of thing. I think some of that is really ingrained, like, I had good parents. I'm so God as parent is a loving image to me.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I think I have changed who I think of God as I grow up, as I grow older. I think it broadens and changes.
Yeah, I think so. And I hope that's the hoped for outcome. I mean, it's always easy to recognize your own path as the right one.
Oh, exactly.
But I hope
exactly.
that's the right path.
Yeah. Okay, well, now we're going to begin to examine metaphors of God as clothing. This metaphor is used throughout the Bible, beginning when God clothes Adam and Eve and continuing through the works of Paul. Quote, when I was baptized, I was clothed in Christ, and the God who is clothing is the God who wants to shape me more and more into the image of Jesus. I need to let Jesus, my clothing, affect the way I move. I need to let Jesus affect the way I interact, the way I shape affection, the means by which I negotiate others' opinions of me. I need to let Jesus affect the way I perceive my own body. What if I could say my body interacts and changes places with Jesus as I wear him? First of all, Alice, if God is clothing, what sort of clothing is God to you? Like a comfy old sweater, suit of armor?
Oh, I just think I'm so drawn to this paragraph. And I just think it's beautiful. I'm trying to get this visual image of my clothing kind of being Jesus or God affecting the way I move and the way I interact with others and all those things. I don't know why that just has a beautiful image to me. Especially because when you really think about it, the whole concept of clothing was really kind of started being based on a shame reaction to what happened in the Garden of Eden. So,
wow, that's true.
You know, So that's just kind of interesting to me. I think God, and this is going to have to do with my personal style, I suppose. I certainly want the clothing of God to be comfortable,
mm-hmm.
but modest, colorful, different fabrics. I mean, I don't want it to be a sackcloth by any stretch. You know, I want it to be attractive and drawing others, but not, I mean, I want them to see God in those things as opposed to seeing me. I want it to be kind of a good, nice whole package, you know, coordinated. So what about you?
Oh, this is funny, and it just popped into my head, and I'm not a shoe person at all. But I'm thinking of God as like a pair of really gorgeous low-heeled shoes. You know, something comfortable, but that, you know, make me feel really strong and fabulous at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Like something you'd wear to work versus like a cocktail party.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny. God's an old shoe.
Well, how do you think clothing affects us or defines us? And how can we extend this effect when we consider God as clothing?
Yeah. Well, certainly clothing, I think clothing, even from a given day to day, much less in individual senses of style that, you know, moves throughout their lives, the colors we wear, I think, represent how we're feeling about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
which is a necessary outpouring of how we're feeling God is feeling about us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bagginess or tightness of our clothing says something about how we're feeling about ourselves. And it's interesting because I had not thought about this as a connection of how we're feeling about God or how we think God's feeling about us. But I do think, particularly in times when our dress is maybe not conveying confidence or happiness, it's probably indicative that we're struggling in some areas with ourselves as it comes to our spirituality. I think that's not a surprising thing because most of us put on external ways of communicating our happiness, sadness, fear, whatever, even when we're trying not to.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's easier for us, Lori, as Westerners, because clothing,
yeah.
I mean, when you think about this in a totally different environment, a third world country where clothing is, but I think in every society that I can think about, there is an effort at keeping clothing clean to the degree that is, can be done in where you're living or the group. Mended. I mean, you do look at even third world cultures trying to keep the appearance of clothing and shoes, children who need shoes and things. I mean, that's important in cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was just thinking, if I were wearing God and felt like I were wearing God, what would that look like to me? And I have to say, fabulous Chanel suit for me.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, and for me, whatever, I mean, I think fabulous Chanel suit is cool. For me, any dress that makes me feel just absolutely fabulous. I mean,
exactly.
You know, something that makes, that brings out the shine in my eyes and, you know, makes me feel good about how I'm interacting with other people and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, continuing with the theme. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to ask you. So was the quotation at the end of that really the means by which I negotiate others' opinions of me or navigate others' opinions of me? I'm just trying to kind of get the meaning of that. The means by which I negotiate others' opinions of me.
I think navigate would be a fine synonym there.
Okay.
It's how you weigh it.
Okay.
What it means
okay.
to you.
Okay. Because I was trying to, I was over-reading it. Okay, sorry. Move on.
Okay. Well, continuing with the theme of clothing, there's another layer to the metaphor, and that is, of course, our relationship, especially as women, with our bodies. Quote, that God is pressed up against all the corrosive shame in my life. not just the shame I feel about my body, but all my whatever else shame, all the many pockets of curdling shame and regret I carry. While I feel cloaked with shame, God is tenderly stitching me a suit of clothes. The clothing is God's own self. I suspect that if I could receive this, something small but important would change. Well, let's talk about that. Can you imagine receiving that idea, for one thing? How does God as clothing figure into the issues that we all have with our bodies? How should it?
Yeah, this is powerful because I've been trying to reflect on wherever it is in the scriptures that, you know, you are marvelously and wonderfully made and beautifully made, and really try and think about how can I so internalize that? You know, how can I practice and make a routine out of staring at myself in the mirror and saying that instead of the immediate critical thoughts I have of gray hair, whatever. So I think if we could think of God as master tailor in that regard and really think about God's ability to create a suit for us that would accentuate all the challenging parts of our body, you know, if we could really see that as God's ability, if we can put on God in that way and stop focusing our thoughts on our big hips or whatever it is, if we could start reshaping our language about how we're describing ourselves, what we're seeing, and even seeing God looking at that and saying, how could I make you so beautifully dressed that you would not see these flaws in yourself, or that you would not see them as flaws? Because I don't think God sees them as flaws.
Yeah, I agree. But how do you ever get to that place? I mean, I can't imagine looking in the mirror and seeing God in, you know, in my waistline, for instance. I mean, if we could incorporate that into our lives, there would go beauty magazines and cosmetic surgery and foundation garments out the window. Let's face it.
Amen, sister. What are those black things that, oh, Judy wears? Oh, it's those Spanx. Oh, I shouldn't say to everybody in the world that Judy wears those. Everybody probably wears them. But anyway, sorry, Jude. I have one technique that I'm been working on, which is why when I got this script from you, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. I have this little, I don't know, it's a little spot at the bottom of my throat that's probably like where veins of just little capillaries have just blown out, and it's never going to go away, and it's tiny. And I'm probably the only person that notices. I imagine John doesn't even notice it, but literally, I can look fabulous, and I look in the mirror, and that is what I see. This little tiny spot, and then I'm just like, oh, that is, you know, I just hate that. So I've started meditating on, you've got to rename that spot. And so I've named it the God spot, and I'm saying to myself, that spot is a place where God can come into me and change me. And I don't know why it's there, but I'm going to call it the God spot, and I'm going to just get in a better place with it. And it's almost a joke within myself now that I'll look at that and go, well, there's my God spot. And like I'm kind of thinking, if I really get into this, this darn thing will probably disappear, and then I'll be lost without it, you know? So that's one thought.
And I think that's a very good and useful tool. Ladies, let's all look in the mirror and look for our God spot and reflect on it in a joyful manner.
Yeah.
Well, friends, this is only the tip of the iceberg with this book. We're going to return to it again, certainly. But next week, we'll go on to something new and different, and we hope you'll join us. Until then, if you're looking for God, just open a book.
Have a great week.